Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome to the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando. Are you serious? A one-woman show featuring my guest today, actor, writer, producer, and performer, Tullis McCall. Are You Serious opens Monday, September 19th, 7:30 p.m. at the United Solo Festival in New York City. That's www.unitesolo.org. For tickets, call 212-239-6200.
Tullis McCall. I love that name. I'll say it many times. Tullis McCall. She's done so much, I want to get her talking first, but I do have to say this at least. The Los Angeles Times said Tullis McCall tells the story of womankind. So you know what we're in for. What every woman wants to know. Tell us, Tullis McCall, welcome to the Reasonable Voices. How are you?
Marcello, you little dummy. It's so nice to talk to you.
You know, I'll tell the audience right away, Tullis and I have maybe had 2-3 conversations tops. I've never met her, but she and I are, we're New Yorkers. And we have a friend in common, by the way, come to think of it, my old NBC boss, who I think introduced us via email. Anyway, Tullis is on the show to talk about Tullis. Tullis McCall. Tell us, you've been doing so much, especially since 2007. So, first question, women I have known. Women I have known.
Yeah.
Not me, but you. Go. It's going to be that kind of show, I can tell.
Yeah, really. Right down the tube. Women I've known, it was... and then it became What Every Woman Knows. We changed the title. It was my first one-woman show.
Yes.
And I toured it from about 15 years. I toured it to colleges and high schools and theaters all over the country.
Wow.
And it's the story of American women, the history of American women. As a British friend of mine said, oh, I suppose it's quite short then, isn't it? Yeah, I know. Only the Brits could get away with that.
Yeah, that's right.
So I told it as, you and I talk so easily. I'm just assuming you grew up, as did I, with a lot of relatives who were great storytellers, you know?
Oh, yes.
And so the kitchen became the place.
Absolutely.
Where... You heard the story.
Yes.
And that's, when Uncle Billy came over, you wanted to be wherever he was.
Yes.
And Aunt Ginny, you wanted to follow her and da-da-da-da-da. So it's sort of like that,
mm-hmm.
as is my current one-woman show. It's that conversational stuff what I did with What Every Woman Knows was I just said, I'm every woman, and I've been alive since, the beginning.
Sure.
So I knew Sojourner Truth, and I knew Victoria Woodhull.
Gotcha.
all, you know, the rage now in politics.
Sure.
She ran for the presidency in the 1800s. So that was my point of view.
Okay.
And I would say, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so then I would introduce people to these women without, you know, with grace, with a lot of humor, because if you're going to talk about women's history and you can't be funny, you'll just end up, you know, tarring and feathering people in the audience. So you have to have that, you know, that humor.
Uh-huh.
To help people to listen. And it, you know, I guess what I do is I say things that other people think.
Yes.
So I remember after I did one show in the high school, and one of the lines that I had was, you know, back in the day, women didn't have a choice about what they did with their last name when they got married. It was never a law that you had to change your name. It was just custom.
Yes.
But today, you know, women have a choice because they can either take their husband's name or keep their father's name.
Yes, that's right.
So there's that choice. And,
Is there a third choice?
No. Well, you can, actually, I do know people who just chucked the whole thing and made up, you know, completely new names.
Yes.
But after I did the show, this guy came up to me and he said, I have to tell you, I'm having dinner with my daughter tonight. She's getting married. And I've been very angry at her because she's not taking her husband's name. And he said, I now see her point.
Ah.
It's going to be a different dinner than we thought it was going to be.
Yes.
So it was like that, you know, and they do it again sometime, but I you know, because there's still a dearth of theater that really reflects women.
Yes, absolutely. I think also theater and the arts in general, but theater because it is live and it's right there for your immediate response, whatever that may be, laughter, tears, applause, even contemplation, oh my God. But because it is so immediate and intimate at the same time, as well as a collective sharing, I know somewhere along the line you've said theater is the temple, but it certainly is a place where people can get the truth about themselves. But one quote about you that I like, a woman of a certain age sticks her finger into the light socket of life and invites you to hold hands. You gotta tell me about that.
I don't know who I said this. I might have said this to you the other day. I could do a one-woman show about broccoli.
Uh-huh. Yes, you did.
So I happen to be 66, so I've noticed things in my life shifting, and it wasn't anything I certainly didn't plan it.
Uh-huh.
And you know, there's a wonderful writer, Penelope Lively. Don't you remember that name?
Oh yes.
And she's written some wonderful stuff, and one of her treatises is on aging. And she said, and she's 80. That is not what I imagined. It's not what I imagined it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But then I never imagined it.
Yes.
It's about sharing that, you know, that point of view, because nobody's talking about it out there. It's the blue elephant in the room. Although there was a wonderful Israel Horowitz play recently called Out of the Mouths of Babes, and that addressed the issues quite well. But for the most part, it's, you know, talking about what's sagging and what you're forgetting, and there's no like, hey, what's the reality of this?
Yes.
And so I've started to do that, and because, you know, it's, you know, like Michael Kinsley, he is a writer, and he said, you know, if we're lucky, we make it to 80 or
yes.
so, but we also want to make it there with all of our marbles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we want good health, and then we'll choose our poison as to, you know, how we would like to leave the planet.
Exactly.
But mortality is, you know, it's an ever-growing occupation. It takes up more and more space in my brain every day.
Of course.
So, you know, I've created my own work as an actor, so now I'm creating this, and, you know, there's not a lot out there for women in their 60s. You know, it's nice that we have Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin on TV. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all the smooth people. I'm not one of them anymore.
Did you say smooth people?
Yeah.
Did you? Are you speaking about skin? I'm just curious. Is that what?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow!
Almost.
I got it. Almost. The smooth people.
I started to notice that I was looking at people. You know, I would walk up to them and I'd get closer and closer and closer. And it's sort of like visiting the zoo.
You look them over,
and there's not a wrinkle on there. And it's fascinating. And I now realize what, when I was a kid coming up, you know, the older people would say, come here, let me get a look at you. You remember that?
Yes.
Up and down and everything.
Mess with your hair.
They were just noticing that you were smooth. That you
smooth.
Didn't have any wrinkles. That's what they were doing.
Trying to remember. Oh, gee.
Yes, well, yes. Was I ever that smooth? I can't believe that. So, anyway, that certainly was on TV, and that's a lot of what's in the theater, and it's certainly what's in the movie. So I'm, you know, kind of jumping up and down and going, you know, let's rumble with the boomers, because there's 70 million of us.
Exactly. And growing. You know?
Yeah.
But as you say, we all hope to, instead of the alternative, we hope to live a long, healthy life. But we don't, and I don't just mean financially, we've just discovered recently, many of us, that even preparing financially for retirement doesn't guarantee anything, depending on who's running the country. But generally speaking, for instance, I have a lot of guests on who deal with aging, particularly with Alzheimer's and whatever, and I think the thing that all of us have not mentioned, which you have brought out in your performances and in your plays, One Woman Shows, is the older women get, the more invisible they become to the rest of us.
Mm.
Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, one of the funny ones is being called a guy, which happens all the time.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, if I go, let's just say I'm sitting at a bar.
Let's just imagine that.
Let's just imagine. If I ever went into a bar and I said that,
yes.
And the bartender comes over and usually calls me ma'am, because that's what I am now.
Uh-huh.
And I order my drink and blah, blah, blah. Now, if you were to come in and join me, that same bartender would come back and say, hey, guys.
Interesting. So, I thought guys was sort of generic. No good, huh?
Well, but just look at the word.
Yes.
it goes back to the, you know, all men are created equal.
Yes.
It's just this is like the nephew of that.
I gotcha.
You know?
I gotcha.
So all of a sudden I'm invisible. And I'm a pretty loud person.
I was going to say not very invisible, that's for sure.
No, but I see it, you know, when people, I'm not one of the smooth people, so I really have to push my way in, but, you know, and this is, you know, New York.
Sure.
If you got to, so I think we're invisible as we step out into the street, and I know we're invisible on TV and in the movies, and, you know, unless they go, oh, it's a woman's movie, you know, starring Meryl Streep again. And, you know, we have a cadre now of female actors that we can say, but look,
yes.
Helen Mirren's working. And
all five of them.
Exactly.
Yes.
Dame Judy's working.
Yes.
And, you know, isn't that enough for you people?
Mm.
Or, you know, you see the billboards of the new action movie, and it's starring some muscly person, and, you know, and it, there's a cadre of people, and sort of, over the end, there's this chick. And now they're getting to be more, they're Hispanic.
Uh-huh.
So that covers everything.
Yeah.
And a lot of white guys, and so it's just, you know, so anyway, I agree with you that the theater is, I mean, I really do believe it's a temple. I think people go there because they want to be changed.
Yes.
They want something to happen to them, which, and good theater, as you know, does that.
Yes.
It changes you on a molecular level.
Exactly.
Something happens.
Mm-hmm. I know.
So I like to have them go, me too. Oh,
yes.
Me too.
Yes, yes.
Yep, I know that. Oh, me too.
that is theater. Well, it's in a high school. I even directed a show in a middle school once, and what happened in that with that those I think they were maybe 13, 14 years old. It's been a while, but what happened to them, and then what happened to their audience, which not only included their parents, who would have loved anything, of course, but their peers, who were not ready to see what they saw. And for me too. I mean, I sat there, and here I'd worked with these kids, but something happens when, okay, there they are, you're on your own now, I'm standing in the back. Everyone's looking at you. And I, with the audience of peers and parents and friends and so forth, and teachers, between the performers and me, I got to see that whole effect, that impact on those different groups, if you will, all in one. And that's what theater does.
Nothing else does that.
Exactly. Tulis McCall, only because I love saying that name, I'm going to say it again, and say again to remind everyone, we're talking to Tulis McCall, who's an actor, writer, producer, and performer, and since 2007, she has hosted Monologues and Madness. Tell us a little bit about Monologues and Madness.
Well, I tried writing plays and discovered so far I'm not very good at it. And there's a wonderful cafe here in New York called the Cornelia Street Cafe. You might have gone there when you lived here.
Yes.
Down in the West Village.
Exactly.
And they have a basement with a small stage. And it looks like every teenager's dream, you know, when you were a kid. This could go play in the basement. You went, yeah. Except it doesn't have the rug that we spilled everything on. They don't have that.
No.
But they have two shows a night the entire year, with perhaps the exception of New Year's Eve or something. So they have the spoken word, they have composers and writers and singers and, you know, playwrights and all kinds of things. So I lived in L.A. in New York for 13 years, then I moved out to L.A. and I came back right after 9/11 because I couldn't stand not to be here anymore.
Yeah.
And I was sent to, by a friend of mine out in L.A., she said, you have to go meet these people. So I went and met them, and I did, I think it was two play readings, and one of which there was four people on the stage and three people in the audience, one of which was me. And instead of saying, you know, please don't come back, the guy who ran it said, well, what are you going to do next? I went, ooh, okay. And I love writing monologues. I always have. There must be some other people out there. This is New York, you know?
Yes, yes.
As Ed Koch used to say, we have a million of everything in New York. And so I just put the word out, you know, to people who wanted to come in and have original monologues that you know, they write them or, you know, they're reading someone else's. So I started doing that back in 2007, and we're still going. We do the first Monday of every month, and I picked some guest curators now to bring in new people.
Yes.
And so it's a lovely evening, and Francesca Rizzo, a friend of mine, is going to be producing an off-Broadway play from her monologue. Yeah, and I'm working on my own one-woman show from the monologues that I brought in. So different people, like, you know, do it for different reasons.
Sure.
And they're not all character monologues. Some they're sort of, you know, here's what happened to me this week monologue.
Gotcha.
But I think that the monologue is the kind of, you know, the elbow of the theater. It's around which everything flows.
Gotcha.
You know, because when that happens, when one person is just standing there talking.
Yes.
And the molecules shift.
Sure.
And I always say, you know, my idea is of a good monologue is that, let's say you were in a theater and they were rehearsing. And you peeked in through the back door and your friend said, we're going. And you kept saying, hold on.
Yes, yes.
Because you weren't you were gonna go anywhere until that person was done.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Whatever it was they were doing. So that's what I say to people. You know, make it that good.
Exactly. I can say as a director, there were a few times actually that has happened to me as I held auditions when someone came in. You know, boom and. You know, all I had to do, because of course all your assistants want to whisper something to you, just put up my hand, because no one was going to speak. I remember this one woman in particular, as she just stood there. She didn't move. She didn't gesture. She just stood there. And that was her monologue. Okay, we're going to take a short break. Believe it or not, we've already been talking 20 minutes with our good friend from New York, Tulis McCall, actor, writer, producer, and performer, and her one-woman shows. We'll be back to talk more about them and the Public Theater in New York and being bi-coastal and front row center, all of it.
Are you serious? A one-woman show featuring my guest today, actor, writer, producer, and performer, Tulis McCall. Are You Serious? Opens Monday, September 19th, 7:30 p.m. at the United Solo Festival in New York City. That's www.unitesolo.org. For tickets, call 212-239-6200.
We'll be right back with Tulis McCall. Stay with us.
Now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. We came across Butter in a local film festival. We were very lucky, as its 1 week in theaters certainly didn't gain it much attention. Jennifer Garner stars as Laura, an ambitious Iowan with an I'm better than you core, naked political ambition, and, shall we say, a metrosexual husband. One can't help but appreciate the politically satiric wink toward those who remember Michelle Bachmann. The plot is overly simple. Laura's husband is a legendary butter carver, winning the state fair competition so many times in a row, it's time to step aside. This development horrifies Laura, who sees his celebrity as central to her ambitions. So she will step in, win the competition, and rise to new heights. Of course, this won't be so easy, given the emergence of a child prodigy butter carver and the entry of Brooke, played by Olivia Wilde, a scene-stealing hooker owed money by Laura's husband. The value here is in the pervasive offbeat humor. Often close but never mean-spirited, this tongue-in-cheek tale is smart. Maybe too unusual for the mainstream and lacking the depth of those serious indies, this butter is slathered on thick and it's darn good. Butter. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Find us on the web at IndieFilmMinute.com.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio Show with my New York, L.A. bi-coastal guest, Tulis McCall, who is an actor, writer, performer, producer. We want to talk about her new one-woman show, Are You Serious? Let's start with that. I mean, there's lots to talk about. Yes. Tell us about Are You Serious and what made that come about?
Well, it's a show about being a woman of a certain age.
Uh-huh.
So in this society, that means, you know, you're somewhere between 40 and death.
Oh,
and that's who you are. But there comes an age, and for me, sort of 65 was the tipping point, where you start to go, are you serious? What do you mean I'm 65? What? No. My father was 65.
That's right.
No, but I am not. I'm not gonna. No, we're not doing that.
Mm.
So it's like age. I say in the show, age is like Jabba the Hutt, you know, from Star Wars, and he's just sitting there smoking a hookah, and it's waiting for you to show up.
Mm.
And when you do show up, there's always a point, I think, where it hits us, and it's a surprise, like. Penelope Lively, she said that it's like, you know, you're going along and you have this plank that you're walking, and all your life you see this, it's endless,
uh-huh.
You know, wait, and then all of a sudden you get to a point and you go, whoa, wait a minute, and you look back and what's in back of you is a lot longer than what's in front of you.
Hmm. Yes.
And it's I don't care what you do. I don't care. You can exercise and do all of that stuff and give away the money and be a really nice person, but you're going to get to some point where you say, "Are you serious?" Come on. Because it's I think somehow we're born thinking that we're going to live forever because, you know, like the whole birth thing was so painful, you can't believe anybody would ever, you know, if you have to go through that, you're going to live forever. They wouldn't make you, they wouldn't just say, now you have to die.
Yes.
Because then you'd say, well, what's the point of learning? What's the point of eating? What's the point of anything if I'm just going to, you know, walk the plank?
Mm.
But how does that work? So there comes, I think that there's a point in our lives, and for people who are younger, I say, you're going to be surprised. This is not a spoiler alert, you know.
Yes.
I'm just telling you that, you know, when you discover that when you're sitting down, it takes a little bit longer to get back up. But there's also wisdom, and there's also perspective, and there's all, you know, there's all these other things. But it's that real sense of mortality that is, you know, going, you know, mortality is clearing its throat, you know?
Yes.
So I just think, you know, that's where I am. So that's what I'm talking about.
So are you serious? Really asks the question, I guess, even almost at the mirror. That first moment when you think you look more like your mother or father than yourself. And you know, with AARP, I understand, they send out all of their material from the time you're 50 years old.
About 10 minutes after you turn 50.
Exactly. And that's what happened when I started getting all this mail from them. And I said to my wife, why are they sending this stuff to me? And she says, well, you know, you did turn 50. And I said, well, so what? What's 50? You know? But evidently they think so. And they send you all of this. And the point I'm making, I think, is what you're saying, both from your character's point of view and your point of view as the actor and writer, but also as the audience looking at you and at what your character represents, you are suddenly in a whole different category. People treat you differently. And I'm getting these things about, I actually got something from the AARP asking me if I needed help with my driving. I'm going, what? So how is your audience responding to you and all of your performances? You know, you've toured 40 states, and I know you have a biggie coming up on September 19th. Tell us about that. I'm asking you 5 questions. You can answer them in any order you wish.
Well, women multitask.
Exactly.
Well, this is a new show. I've done it 3 times here in New York.
Yes.
And now I was invited back to something called the United Solo Festival.
Oh, yes.
It runs from September, I think it's through just before Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
And they do an extraordinary job. They have one tiny little theater right at Theater Row. It's a studio theater. And they do something like 300 different shows.
Mm, wow.
Yeah. So I've been invited back. I got the Best Storytelling Award for last year.
Excellent.
And so the show has changed, you know, since then, because I've changed.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's more, there's a great sense of, I have no idea what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't a clue. So to pretend that I do, it's sort of self-defeating.
Sure.
And but to say I really don't know, it focuses me more on the moment. You know, I'm becoming sort of rabid for appreciating the moment.
Mm-hmm.
This beautiful day and taking advantage of it and, you know, that.
Exactly. I don't know if we said this off air or in the last segment, but we'll risk saying it again. We want to talk about your research, yes, in the book you were talking about off air, but also we don't, especially we baby boomers, we don't think there is an end. We are so used to so much. And you know, the old cliche, life is not a rehearsal, this is it. But one thing we don't rehearse for, that's for sure, I don't know that anyone does, we don't rehearse for growing old. We just don't. And then all of a sudden you're cast in that role. You're now old. Perform. And things are different. And I like that you are responding to this for all of us, male, female, whatever color. How do you anticipate? You say you've changed, the play has changed. Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
And the research you've done, what is moving you or moved you in the direction of are you serious? Besides getting older, I guess.
Well, I mean, that's the nut of the whole thing. And
yes.
What I'm noticing is that you know, they say you become more of what you were. Well,
uh-huh.
I was cranky before.
Uh-huh.
I was always cranky.
Uh-huh.
But now I do it. People go, ah, you know, you're cranky because you're a woman of a certain age. Hell no. This is how I've always been.
Yes.
Because now people look at me and go, ah, well, she's an old woman. She's a little cranky.
Yes.
there are things that there are more and more things that I won't do just because I don't want to.
Uh-huh.
You know, when someone says, oh, you want to go over to their house, it would really mean a lot, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'll show up for 10 minutes and now, I'm out of here.
Mm.
So, and people who waste my time with a conversation, who say things that they don't need to say,
mm-hmm.
you know, they make noise. They make noise. I guess it makes them feel alive or something.
Mm.
And I think there's, you know, better ways to do that. You know, one of my favorite ones is, are you still up?
Really? People ask you that?
Well, you know, when you're with whatever and, you know, are you still awake? Well, I'd be sitting here staring at you, so yeah, I guess I am. Or, you know, people who talk about, I went on this tour to Italy, and the people would sit around talking about what they like to have for breakfast while we were in Italy eating the best food in the world.
I know.
They're going to talk about,
I hate that.
You know, Cheerios and yogurt or whatever. What? And I was just going, oh my God, people, what are you doing? I'm just noticing stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, people, we sit around and we waste precious time. We don't tell each other, how are you? What is going on in your brain today? We don't do that. Not a lot of us, anyway.
I
think we can do that.
Exactly. I think that's a much better way of spending our time. I know that I have, you sort of alluded to this same sort of situation. Growing up with an Italian family, the women primarily did most of the talking. I mean, I had uncles who would speak, but the ones I remember the most, my father and my uncle Gino, were men of very few words. And then when they did speak, we paid attention. But I don't know where I was going with that point. I know, the food thing. I never, to this day, and my wife does it, I hope she doesn't hear this show, there you are having breakfast. You're in the middle of breakfast. It's a wonderful breakfast. And she wants to know what I want for dinner. Well,
exactly.
What I want for dinner is to be able to finish breakfast in peace without talking about dinner. Okay.
My sisters and I do that, and I have a women's group that I meet with, and we've gone away a couple of times. And that's, you know, it's like, girls, please.
Yes.
Just let me do my damn
thing. Oh, heavens.
Oh, God.
All right.
Anyway, I think we waste a lot of time, but I also think, you know, no one's taking advantage of us. I remember when my mother was in a sort of an assisted living place, and they had a big old dining room, and about an hour before the meals were served, people would start to collect.
Yeah.
Because they had no life.
Yes.
That dining room was their life. And I thought, my God, look at the wisdom that's here. Look at it.
That's true.
Nobody's asking them anything.
Anything. And they've lived all of it. And they can warn us, if nothing else, about what's to come.
Right. Right.
But these are people.
Yeah. Can't, you know, like, make room for the young people.
Yes.
Like me.
Yeah.
I was young.
I know how to do young, too. Listen, plus I know how to do not smooth. Anyway, but back to, which, and not that we've left it, but are you serious? This being asked back is always nice, always a great thing. Uh-huh. And you're going to do this on September 19th. Tell us some more about, you said you, I know you're doing your own research, obviously, for both your life research and actual, you know, online books and all that. But tell us about some of the things that influenced your writing, Are You Serious?
You know, really, it was you know, turning, seeing 65 coming up in the rearview mirror, uh-huh. where that great cartoon with the images are larger than they appear.
Yes.
And saying, you know, because I'm a great procrastinator. You know, I come from a long line of procrastinators. And if we could have put off breathing, we would. I think maybe Tuesday I'll take a couple of breaths. I don't know. So I spent a lot of time procrastinating stuff. And then it was like, well, guess what? The party is going to be over. Mm. The party has happened. Two-thirds of it has gone by. If you're lucky, you've got another third.
Mm.
And so when that repeats itself over and over again, and you keep saying, are you serious? Stop it. Go away. And it comes back the next day, it's the damn same thing. And then it says it over and over and over again until finally it creates a little gully in there in that little brain pattern. So I just started writing about that. You know, I'm like a stream of consciousness writer.
Yes.
But now I'm looking at writers like Penelope Lively, who's a wonderful British author who's written on aging itself and what it feels like, and she's 80-something.
Mm.
And then she wrote a book called Dancing Fish and, I think it's Amonites, M-O-N-I-T-E-S. And then there's this wonderful new book about, called Old Age, A Beginner's Guide.
Oh, yes.
By Michael Kinsley, who was a writer for the L.A. Times and the New Republic and Harper's, etc. So he's, you know, I love those writers.
Yes.
Because they just tell the facts, you know. Mm-hmm. They just don't get into a lot of emotion. So that's spurring my, you know, it's connecting to a lot of stuff that I already had. But then, you know, it's making me go, oh, but there's some room now to move around. Like I always said, you know, I came up with this thing about we weren't born, we were evicted.
Uh-huh.
Because why would you want to leave there?
Yes.
You know, you're warm, you get to be carried around, food, not a problem, pooping, not a problem, and you get to eavesdrop on your mother.
Yes.
So what could be better than that?
Mm-hmm.
And but then all of a sudden the room gets too small. And so I say your first act that you ever did was procrastination, because you said not so fast. thinking about it.
Yes.
Everybody had to wait for you, you know, or they went in and got you.
And then the first thing they did was slap you behind.
To punish you for procrastinating. That's been a sort of riff of mine. You know, this birthing, this was a total eviction and betrayal.
Mm.
And so he wrote in his book, you know, everybody's born thinking that they're never going to die.
Yes.
So then I just take that and I went, well, of course they don't want to die. They've just been through hell. They can't believe anybody would punish them again. Everything was fine until I got here.
Until I got here.
What do you mean I'm only going to... What do you mean it's a limited engagement?
Well, I can tell from this conversation and from, you know, the way your sense of humor that this, while your one-woman shows are about what every woman knows and are you serious, you are alerting us to be prepared, to not be surprised that things change, our skin becomes less smooth, but you are doing it, I am assuming, in a what is hilariously funny and gives us some sense of what's the right word, if it's not hope, it's more than inevitability, is it not? What do you say? What are you leaving us with?
Well, we know what the outcome is.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. So but you know, I allude to this, I might think it's more of a private, but I would not be surprised if baby boomers start taking our exit into our own hands.
Yeah.
And say, you know what? This is good here.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm ready to to leave. At least investigate it, because we've seen what happened. We saw what happened to our parents.
Sure.
And a lot of that was unjust and really horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us were the caretakers for that.
Yes.
So I would not be surprised if this, you know, this whole movement of, you know what, this, I may be done.
Mm.
So, and I'm going to think about it, you know, but it's an active part of our thought process.
Mm.
It's certainly part of mine. I look around and I go, jeepers, what if I become immobile? What if I do, you know, all those things?
Sure.
Well, what would that be? So I think that because we're such an enormous, you know, there's, what, 80 million of us, part of the population,
uh-huh.
that we need to be addressed, and I want to have people say, me too. Right, I got that.
Gotcha.
Yes. Thank you for saying it out loud in the most brightly lit corner of the room.
Okay.
I'm hearing it.
Well, tell us, how do we see you? We know it's September 19th. Remind us again where, how we get tickets. Tell us.
Right. At this time, it's only one performance, but I'm looking for other venues to do this in New York. So there's a couple of ways. I have a website called areyouserious.nyc.
Okay. And
then the festival is called United Solo.
Okay.
And you can just go to the United Solo 2016, look it up.
Okay.
Here and purchase tickets through Telecharge.
And we should also say that you are the creator and editor of the Theater Review site, right? Front Row Center?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The Front Row Center. Both bias and brief.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
It now features like 20 writers and covers over 300 shows per year. That's quite impressive. When do you have time to do that?
Well, when I moved back from L.A., I had missed the theater so much, you know, because it's few and far between out there.
Sure.
And so I started to volunteer usher, which you can do here in New York at the off-Broadway houses. And the first shows I saw were so horrible that I actually wrote to my friends and said, don't do this. Don't go.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't do it. And so they wrote back and said, wow, that's really funny. That's all I needed.
It doesn't take much to get you writing.
Yeah, really. I know. Oh, you think I'm funny? How about that? You think I'm funny? So I just started doing it as a volunteer usher, and then I was asked to write for a website called New York Theater Guide, which is a excellent resource for people. And then I was able to get into Broadway shows.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, now we're on the Broadway B list, or whatever they call that.
Uh-huh.
So now we're doing theater from, you know, off to Broadway.
Excellent.
And the point is that it should be short. You know, it's like if I met you at a bar and you said, jeepers, what should I go see? I should be able to tell you in, you know, a minute and a half.
Okay.
Max. So we try to keep the reviews, you know, we're not selling column space like Ben Brantley does.
Yes.
So we don't have to take up room. So I, you know, it's like in and out, folks.
Yeah.
Go see the show. Wait for the show and just tell them why. So yeah, we're doing over 300 shows, and we just reached 100,000 clicks in less than 3 years.
Wow.
That was nice.
That's good.
Yeah.
Sure.
All
right, we're going.
Maybe we'll have to come down and do some Washington.
That's right. We're going to have to run. We've run out of time. We've been talking to Tulis McCall, actor, writer, producer, and performer. She has written and performed in One Woman Show, What Every Woman Knows, and Are You Serious? And what else, Tulis? Tell me. Did I get them?
Running with Scissors. I did that out in L.A. It was directed by Phil Proctor from the Fire Sign Theater.
Very good.
And those are the three.
All right. Excellent.
Come and see. Are you serious? Just Google me. I'm out there.
Okay. Tulis McCall. All right, everyone. We really thank you, Tulis, for being on the show. It's been really funny and a nice wake-up call just to wake up, you know? Life is what we make it, and so why not make the best of it with all the time that we have and don't think it's forever. Is that fair?
Yeah.
All right.
Yes, it's not a rehearsal.
That's right.
As you said.
Thank you, Tulis.
I had such fun. You are just delicious. have been delightful. You were wonderful.
Oh, my goodness. Well, maybe you have to write a two-character play.
Go tell your wife I said so.
Okay, I will. Thank you, Tulis. All the best to you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
Another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Andy Film Minute. What would you call a film that took 12 years to complete? In this case, nothing short of a cinematic masterpiece. Richard Linklater began shooting Boyhood in 2002 when his star, Eller Coltrane, was not yet 8 and adorable in his innocence. When the film wrapped in 2013, Mason, Eller's character, was 18. He had weathered good days and bad, demonstrated a wide range of behavior, both good and bad, and headed off to college. Mason was a typical American youth. There's nothing radically different about him. His problems are simply recognizable as challenges of growing up in America today. The genius of the film resides in its almost time-lapse elements. Incredibly, Linklater completed Boyhood in 39 days of actual filming, meeting once a year for only a few days. It will be remembered as special for capturing the passage of time more comprehensively than any other coming-of-age film is ever again likely to do. We watch the same actors gradually morph physically and emotionally into who they will unpredictably become. The process offers us a universal picture of how time and life experience changes us, how the human animal matures, and how American cultural values have evolved. The payoff? A singularly unique work of artistry. Boyhood. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. Thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Imagine America from 9/11 to standing rock solid. To progress beyond the tragedies of the past is perhaps our greatest challenge and truest testimony to America's greatness. Imagine corporations contributing most to climate change being taxed and tasked with its obstruction. Imagine government skipping vacations to adequately fund public education and research for Alzheimer's, cancers, and Zika cures. Imagine health, pharmaceutical, and insurance industries deserving public trust. Imagine progress is accepting both individual and global accountability for broken treaties, Guantanamo, and refugees fleeing wars. Imagine. Electing Barack Obama president would end racial discrimination. Exceptionalism is stealing corn and Thanksgiving from Native Americans. 15 million American children going to bed without food, and our increasingly extreme weather as prologue to food and water wars. Imagine America's progress without the political timing of a Congress grandstanding permission to sue Saudi Arabia, without also considering indicting the Bush-Cheney administration for every member of our military who died, was physically disabled, or mentally and psychologically damaged because of its mushroom cloud deceit. Imagine not being a nation of individuals too often maneuvered into ours not to reason why, ours but to do and die. Perhaps honoring those who tragically lost lives and loved ones 15 years ago is to be ever more vigilant in questioning those in authority who offer only talking points and clichés. Corporate-owned politicians and media repeat the mantra, America changed forever on September 11th, 2001. But have you ever heard a soundbite that suggests why? All of us know suicide is becoming an American epidemic, especially among veterans and millennials. But why? Why rising suicide rates, drug overdoses, community tensions, gun violence? Why our diminished self-certainty and loss of faith in our sustainability? Was it 9/11? Or how oil wars for Wall Street profits used 9/11.
Is the alt-right a troubling flashback of suppressed memories like Wounded Knee, the 1964 murder of three young civil rights workers, or the 2003 invasion of a country that had nothing to do with 9/11? Listen, Powell and Clinton emails, Wells Fargo sacrificial lambs, Fourth Estate blood ratings, nor lack of Lauer expertise can trump our American dream, or ever be the sum total of a single American life. Imagine all American women and all Americans of color never again being the ignored minority. Imagine standing up for who we're for, rather than encouraging free press for what's against our common good. Imagine rising in 2016 to a vantage point from which we can choose to relive our past, mourn our present, or visualize our potential. If we put aside the childish selfishness of anti-American organizations with intentionally deceiving ultra-patriotic sounding names like Americans for Prosperity, American Crossroads, and the Freedom Caucus, then it is perhaps the end of the beginning of the moneyed Koch Hydra targeting the middle third, and all that are responsible for nothing lasts forever. Imagine in September 2016, foothill jocks gently laying orange roses at the feet of cheerleader Ashley Adamance. That's exceptionalism. The Sioux Nation includes nine Native American tribes like the Dakota, Lakota, and Nakota, for whom South Dakota was named, and home long before any pale-faced tourist visited the Badlands. Dakota is the Sioux word for friends or allies. Maybe that's why they didn't demand that new Spanish and English settlers speak Wanapanoag. In November 2016, even in Jamestown, Virginia, we are the opportunity to stand up with our vote to include all of the people in We the People all of the time. However, we can begin right now wherever we are by standing up for clean air and non-privatized lead-free public water free of corporate ownership or municipal pollution. Imagine reversing the what is past is prologue of slavery, relocation centers, gender inequality, and income disparity by standing up for all American families. Imagine not eliminating Native American culture, not enslaving African Americans, encamping Asian Americans, enclosing LGBTQ Americans, exiling Hispanic and Latino Americans. Imagine not excluding female Americans constitutionally. The only true change is to live changed. Imagine choosing to move forward as we did in Selma, Stonewall, and now Standing Rock. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.